After Dr. McLeod, we have the Reverend Murder McLeod. He came to Talbot after Dr. McLeod's retirement in 1949. He was a native of Ballalan, Loch Stewies, and he was minister of Kilmure Congregation, Isle of Skye, and from there he came to Talbot. During his ministry, the church was renovated very thoroughly, both inside and outside, for being an old building, it was in danger of falling into a terrible state of disrepair. But the congregation met the challenge of restoration work most heroically, and by different methods raised a considerable sum of money, and the interior and the exterior of the church were transformed with first-class workmanship. And also there was re-roofing and many repairs carried on at the Mass. Murder MacLeod is well remembered in Harris as an engaging and effective preacher who could come very near to the hearts of his hearers through the simplicity of his messages. And as an evangelistic preacher, he appealed to his hearers and invited them to discover for themselves the wonderful truths of the gospel news. And by way of illustrations, he could bring his sermon to the attention and to the interest of the very young, even as he could do to the attention and to the hearts of the very old. He retired in 1956 and he resided in Stornoway until he died in the 1960s. In the 1970s. Now, perhaps we could lump the next two ministries together in one paragraph. For one reason, they are both still with us in the flesh, and perhaps it would not be very fair to give a running biography of people who are able to speak for themselves. It was unusual for Talbot to have a long vacancy, and this was also true during the last two vacancies, when the induction of the two successive ministries happened within 1 year of the previous minister's retirement. Donald D. McCrae was born in Miamiglouis, and he was ordained and inducted in the parish of Slate, Isle of Skye, in 1942. From there he was translated to the parish of Benbecula in the Presbytery of Lewis in 1949, and in 1956, after Murder MacLeod's retirement, he came to Talbot. He is married to Annie MacLeod from Dalyborough, South Uist, and they have children, two girls and two boys, and they now live after retirement in 1988 in Marley, Harris. He ministered in Talbot for 32 years, longer than anyone else. And the Reverend Norman McKeever, he is your present parish minister of Talbot in the church by the shore. And you respect him, and you cherish him, and by your attendance at the means of grace for Sabbath worship and weekday meetings, you encourage him. He's a native of Charlotte Point, Isle of Lewis, and both his father and grandfather were home-born lay missionaries in this parish. Before coming to Talbot in 1988, his previous congregation was Kilmure Pebble in North Lewis. He is married to Catherine Mackay, whose parents came from Lewis and Ewes, but she herself looks on herself as a Skye woman brought up in the manse of Kilmure Skye. They have three children, Ian and Catherine and David, and our prayerful good wishes go with them all, and may the present day ministry in Tarbert Church congregation be blessed as the ministries were for the past 131 years. Now a paragraph on the floating or the fleeting years of change. We cannot look back over the past history of the church by the shore and the successive ministries there without being acutely aware of the many rapid changes that have occurred within the past two or three generations in Harris, socially and economically. When the first hammer blows and pickaxe and spade began to clear away the rock to lay a foundation for church and manse, there was no bulldozer and no mechanical digger. All was manual labour, and initially most of the labour was voluntary. And I understand that some of the women labored to clear away the foundation of the church over there and of the mass. That might be true and it might be false, but I was told that the women with creels helped to clear away the foundation of the church. The Free Church headquarters could give very little assistance, as there were so many newly formed congregations trying to establish themselves. The Celt industry was failing. There were potato famines, and legal constraints hampered financial returns from the fishing. The newly established congregations in the Free Church had to raise their own funds as best they could. Collections were made from time to time specifically for the church building funds. Money was very scarce in the Hebrides Islands, and indeed there was poverty and destitution. There is an account of one collection raised in Harris for church building which amounted to £8 and odd shillings, which seems to be very meagre, but in real terms of monetary value, this seems to be an adequate collection for the time, 1862. The lack of funding meant that there was no floor in the church for quite a long time when it was built. Now perhaps that's information, perhaps that's news for you. When your great grandmothers came to the church down there, there was no flooring, there was no wood. They had to walk on the earth or on the rubble or on the mud. But there was a plank of wood placed between the pews in lieu of flooring. So really you did not have to walk on the mud or on the earth. You walked on a plank of wood. Before the mass was completed, the minister lived in the outhouse, that outhouse which is just beside the road as you walk up to the church gate. An outhouse which had four rooms that were not very elegant and not very commodious. And later on, this outhouse was used by the minister's man, who also acted as church officer. And later on, this outhouse was used as a wash house and as a scullery. And the minister was given the Gidecliff Islands for grazing sheep, and the Cork Park for graces upheld. And the maid was not very happy when she had to drive the cow up and down the main street for milking. There was a large rainwater tank behind the outhouse, and there were two dry toilets beside the garden, but perhaps there was no piped water supply, I don't know. Now, before the church was officially opened, communion services were held in the open air on the hillside above the main door of the church, Knoknunuman, and a wooden pulpit with platform was specially constructed for these outdoor meetings and services. After the church was opened, the pulpit was dismantled and protected from the weather. Dr. MacLeod was anxious that it should be preserved for posterity as far as possible, and he had it spread out on the rafters of the barn. His desire was that it should be carefully looked after so that the congregation could have this visible link with the building of the church in 1862 and a visible link with the open air communion services on the hillside. And the pulpit is still there in sections, laid out on the lap on the rafters of the barn. And though it is valueless as old wood, perhaps one day, if there was some kind of museum in Paris or historical artifacts, it could be allowed to the public for general interest in the outdoor communion seasons. Prior to the Crofting Act of 1886, the Napier Commission met in this church to take written evidence from the leaders of the crofting communities, a drawing of the church, and of some worthies to give evidence is to be seen in some books that deal with crofting reforms and with land reforms in the Highlands. And two of these worthies from this congregation were Martin Roach from Scarpe and Ian Van McDermott from Scarpe. Now, one paragraph in conclusion. This has no direct bearing on the building of the church in Tar, but it is of interest in the community. The two-masted schooner or yacht, the Breadalbin, was offered to the commissioners who were to make a fact-finding mission to the Western Isles and the western seaboard of the Highlands to assess the state of the inhabitants socially, educationally and economically. There was much destitution and poverty and lack of education and a dire need for places of worship. Dr. McIntosh Mackay was one of the members of this Royal Commission, and as a wise man he stressed two things, and I think it's on these two things that Dr. Mackay made a reputation for himself. He stressed two simple things, and we can stress them too. He stressed that our Isles people were not going to do much in life without education, one. And two, our Irish people cannot make much use of the Bible without being able to read it in a language that they can understand, their mother's tongue. These two things stressed by Dr. Mackay over and over and over again. The Breadalbin yacht was also put to the service of John Morrison, the illustrious blacksmith poet, when he went unto speaking and raising funds to build the church at Manish. And with his guidance and strength of character, the South Harris congregation of Manish was set into the church and ministered 10 years before Tarrant. There are many other stories and anecdotes concerning the church and the different ministers who served in the church, sometimes amusing and sometimes sad, which is the usual mixture of life anyway. There were people who, irrespective of their own failings and eccentricities, served their Lord and Master earnestly and sincerely and cleverly in serving their congregations in this parish as faithful pastors in the flock and community. And when we meet to worship in the church by the shore, or in any other church, or in any other house of worship, we too enjoy the fruits of the labors of others. And may we do so in holy boldness, with joy and sincerity, thankful for the Church universal and for our own very special place of worship here. May the Lord bless you. Good night. Thank you.
Oh, keeping that community center open. Especially with many young people and then in the community with their feelings to that hour. We feel that it's very important that we support these people in their community and these youngsters in their community and this staff campaign we're hoping to have over there next year in making a welcome in the community and make the part of the community and some ideas. I believe to make that there's a lecture on this year, the church tonight and the friends from that go towards the keeper of the hall. And it's likely to speak to you and anyone that wishes to buy these tubes when they're ready, there's a book at the door and someone will take your name and they'll be able to buy these tubes. These tubes will be recycled over the summer and reproduced those in the center. Thank you very much for Kevin. Neil Adams, Mr. McLean. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. We haven't come, we'd be missing you. Thank you for having me. And thank you too for your patience during the next half year, half hour perhaps. That's what you say, half year. And perhaps we'll find something of mutual interest in our subject tonight. Now, it's a thing worth me all right, John. It's all right for the people I joined when to the house of God, God has said to me. Is that quite clear? Yes, thank you. Well, as a preamble or an introduction to the subject which we are to discuss tonight, I can start by saying that this year, 1993, marks what we call the 150th anniversary of the year of the disruption in the history of the officially recognized, established, or parish church of Scotland. That year, 1843, brought changes in church and congregational affairs in every parish in Scotland, from Shetland to the Solway, as the old folks would say, at the hearse discharged. And like every other parish, Harris was directly affected, and still is directly affected, by these changes that followed the disruption. And this year the National Scottish newspapers all contributed special articles to different phases of the disruption. And of course our own several church magazines kept us very well informed, probing for the causes that sparked off this widespread division in the religious outlook of the community. An old writer says that there was great dissatisfaction in Harris with the established ministry of the time. The unrest stemmed partly from the need for social and agricultural reforms and the rising desire for a more evangelical and perhaps more spiritual type of preaching and was commonplace at the time. This does not necessarily mean that the parish minister was less concerned for the spiritual welfare of his congregation than he was for the people's temporal and moral welfare. But we know that some of these parish ministers were excellent, charitable, pious gentlemen, whose desire was to better the lot of the communities in which they served as pastors. We know also that many of those who did eventually leave the church to form the newly set up Free Church of Scotland did not willingly wish to see the church of their fathers split wide open from top to bottom. Later on, the question was, and still is, was the disruption really necessary? But anyway, 7 years after the disruption, there were two new congregations of the Free Church officially established in Paris, one in Manish and one in Tarbes. The Manish did not have a church and a minister until 1852, and Tarbes had to wait for another 10 years. From these two new congregations in Paris came two congregations of the United Free Church and two congregations of the Free Presbyterian Church in North and South Paris, and the Free Church congregations in Swaffe and Liverborough, and finally the Associated Presbyterian Church congregation in Paris. So then, it is obvious that with all these different denominations and ministries and church buildings, all under the same banner of a Presbyterian form of church government, it would be very difficult to form a true assessment of the whole church situation in Paris in one short lecture. Tonight then, we will concentrate on the church that is right beside us here and its ministers, the church by the shore. Church by the shore, this is a very apt and expressive name given by locals and by visitors who have worshipped in Tarbes Church, Igalish Athwatis. Indeed, one of these visitors took a remarkable photograph of this church from the deck of the Hebrides at 7:30 one beautiful morning, as the rising sun above Scalpe made the church windows on the sea side dazzled with radiance. And he or she, whoever took the photograph, sent it to the minister with this address: "The minister, the church by the shore, Paris." And he received it. Of course, we have another well-cared for and living church in the village, and we have other denominations of the Christian church in Paris. But for the purposes of this lecture tonight, it would be advisable to remain with the one building and its ministers. For one thing, time would not permit us to deal adequately with all the churches. Before 1843, the year of the disruption, the parish church was in Scaristan, and officially there was no other denomination in Paris. But the parish minister had a licensed missionary assistant in North Paris. His church was where the Masonic Hall is today, and his residence was where the doctor's surgery is today. There was no church or manse or house, as far as we know, on the rocky headland where they are today, sheltering the East Tarbes Pier. The name of this rocky promontory, which provides a foundation for the church and the mass, was the Whale Headland, Rho Nymuchivara. At some date, a whale had stranded itself there. Probably the local people refined the blubber and processed it into oil, which was very valuable in these days. And of course, we know that after many years with the Bunyan whale station, the Harris people ought to know how to utilize the whale to the best advantage. And we know too that these animals sometimes strand themselves miles away from the sea. Indeed, today on the radio I heard that a whale had stranded itself at Ardnamurchan Point. And 2 months ago, a whale stranded itself at Seaforth Head, 14 miles from the open sea. And people try to get the animal to go back to the sea, but they failed, unfortunately. Now, the very first minister who came to the church at the Leech of Ladley, the Church of Target, was Reverend McIntosh Mackay, LLD, Doctor of Letters. He was the first minister of Target Harris Lee Church congregation. But he was 69 years of age when he came, a very old man, I would say, coming to one of the most scattered parishes in the whole of Scotland at that age, a parish with no roads apart from one. And he guided the building of the church and of the manse when he came in 1862. And these are the very buildings that are in use today by the Church of Scotland congregation. He was an eminent Gaelic scholar and writer, and he did much to set up congregations in the Free Church after the disruption of 1843 throughout the Highlands, Western Seaboard, and the outer and inner isles of the Hebrides, and to establish schools and foster education in these isolated communities, labours to which he gave full-hearted support while he was still fairly young and healthy, long before he came to Target as minister. Dr. Mackay was born in 1793. His father was a taxman of Duartbeg in the Achilles, Sutherlandshire. Educated in the parish school of Tun and St. Andrew's University, and in the Theological College of Glasgow, he was licensed in 1827, and in the following year was ordained as parish minister of Blagan. He edited the Highland Society's Gaelic Dictionary. His great work for the Highlands and Islands congregations was accomplished when he was convener of the Highland Committee of the Free Church, and his contribution to the Western Isles cannot be assessed without reference to the disruption of the church in 1843 and the Ladies Highland Association schools. In 1832 he went to the congregation of Dunoon, was there in the old established parish church of Scotland until he came out, along with most of the Gaelic speaking ministers, to form the Free Church, joining 400 other ministers and elders. The chief reason for the separation was the system of clerical patronage of the time. Fortunately, in 1900, most of the Free Church congregation united with the United Presbyterian Church to form the UF, the United Free Church of Scotland. And later on, in 1929, that UF, that United Free Church of Scotland, united with the old established parish church to form the present-day Church of Scotland. The Apostle Paul speaks of a friend who left him, but who came back afterwards to be a better friend than ever before. So then, these two great churches were parted for a season, but they are now united stronger than ever. For several years after the disruption, there were only about 80 or so Gaelic-speaking ministers, but about 150 Gaelic-essential vacant congregations. The Highland Committee, under Dr. Mackay's guidance, recruited many young men into the ministry, and he was also largely responsible for setting up the Ladies Highland Association schools. Formed in Glasgow and Edinburgh, partly to help divinity students during their training to teach in schools set up in remote areas where the people were to a large extent illiterate. It was said that in the midst of his academic and scholastic labors, his zeal for spiritual blessings seemed to diminish. But before he left Lagan, one communion Sabbath, at the communion table, the message came vividly and personally to himself with power and unction. While ministering in Dunoon, he had two new churches built in that scattered parish. Indeed, no one labored more for the scattered Highland parishes than he did. And his most powerful addresses at the General Assembly were for the educational, social, temporal, and spiritual betterment of the remote Gaels. He went to Australia when he was 61 years of age and built churches in both Melbourne and Sydney. And after being twice in Australia, he returned in 1862 to Talbot. He came to Talbot Harris in 1862, and he soldiered on until finally ill health compelled him to retire, and his last illness was on a journey from Glenelg to Portobello, where he died 17th May 1873. Now, the late Kenneth Campbell, missionary Scadway, tells or told the following story. A stranger saw Dr. Mackay on what Kenneth Campbell said was the big street of Edinburgh. Strag wore the native, which we would take to be Princess. And they saw Dr. Mackay as a tired, weary old man, very sad-looking and forlorn and lonely. And the stranger went up to him and spoke to him something like this. I will not tell you Kenneth Campbell's words word for word, I cannot do that, but I will paraphrase. The stranger went up to him and said, "Excuse me, Dr. Mackay," said, "you do not know me, but I know you. Forty years before this, you were preaching in that church down there, Dirtingston Church," he said. "I was there, I was blessed, and that blessing followed me till today. And I could not pass you on the street without telling you about this. But," he said, "that's not altogether why I want to speak to you. I see that you are worried and you have cares. And please remember that I'm here in Edinburgh and I would like to help. So please, if you have cares or worries that you want to share them with me." And Dr. Mackay said, "Well," he said, "I have. When I left Talbot," he said, "I went to live with my sister." Now, I'm not very sure if they went to live in Dunoon or did they go to live in Portobello. It does not matter. "When I left Talbot, I went to live with my sister. And my sister recently took ill and she was taken to the infirmary here in Edinburgh. And I've just heard that she has died. She has passed away." Now, he said, "I'm an old man and I have no burial lair. I have no burial place. I do not know where I should have my sister's remains buried. My people," he said, "came from the north of Sutherlandshire. That is where their burial place is. I'm too old and too frail. I cannot go up to the north of Sutherlandshire to look after a funeral." And the stranger said, "Well," he said, "please leave all this to me. and he arranged a burial in the cemetery at Duddingston Parish Church. And very, very shortly afterwards, Dr. Mackay himself passed away, and he is buried in Duddingston Cemetery Parish Church. And there is a headstone over his grave marking his burial place. God works in a mysterious way. A sermon that was preached, I said, 40 years after Slough, 35 years previously in Duddingston Parish Church, was the cause or the reason that Dr. Mackay was buried in Duddingston Cemetery. He was a very reserved man and gave the appearance of being austere, and his sermons were logical and deep, centered mainly on cultivating a godly life and the guiding power of prayer in all that the Christian does for the Master. Several publications are credited to him, including a collection of hymns. As a scholar and writer, he received much praise, and the University of Glasgow honored him with the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws, LLD, and offered him the Chair of Humanity, which he declined. He was a very handsome looking man, and his fine facial features and voice attracted the listener's attention. As I said, a headstone marks his burial place in Duddingston. Now, a paragraph about Dr. Mackay and the Education Acts. The ideal of the Reformed Church in Scotland was to have a parish church and a parish school in every parish. But down to the beginning of the 19th century, it was impossible to bring this ideal to fulfillment. And in many parishes, there was no school and even no church. The translation of the Bible into Scottish Gaelic in the beginning of the 19th century encouraged charitable societies to send agents to the Hebrides to teach people to read. Very few people could read in Harris, in English or in Gaelic. Out of a population of over 3,000 adults, as well as children, the parish school was able to meet the needs of only very few. But the SPCK, the Society for the Propagation of Christian Knowledge, set up schools in some remote districts. And indeed, as long as there was a missionary resident in the island of Scarp in Harris, until 1968, a proportion of his salary was paid by that society, SPCK, the Society for the Propagation of Christian Knowledge. Both the church and education in Harris owe a great deal to Dr. McIntosh Mackay, who was instrumental in setting up the Ladies' Highland Association. He spoke so impressively in the Assembly of the Free Church of the neglected areas of the Highlands and Islands, where thousands of children were growing up without education. He guided the founding of schools through the good offices of the ladies of the church in Edinburgh and in Glasgow. And in 1850, the first five schools were opened, all in Harris. Oh, what a remarkable achievement within the space of 1 year. And by the time the Education Authority had taken over the schools in 1872, There were no less than 160 schools run by Dr. Mackay's church committees. The goal of these schools was to give a good Christian education, both in English and in Dalit. Now a paragraph concerning Dr. Mackay and Sir Walter Scott. Dr. Mackay was a dear friend and a very welcome guest at Sir Walter Scott's mansion house at Abbotsford. He gave Sir Walter an insight into many aspects of Highland folklore and history and Gaelic traditions. While he was still compiling the great Gaelic dictionary for the Highland Society, he was a guest at Abbotsford, and Scott writes, "We had much talk on Highland matters." As the years passed, this friendship grew stronger, and so did Scott's affection for him. In 1831, the year before Scott died, his biographer, Lockhart, writes, "He also had a visit from the learned and pious minister of Lagan, Dr. Mackay, who accommodated himself with the tact of genuine kindness to the circumstances of the time. He understood Sir Walter's personal and private cares at the time, perhaps better than most people. Ill health and overwork and financial difficulties troubled Sir Walter, but he was able to refer to happy days they spent together shortly before his death. Spending more pleasant hours in Dr. Mackay's company than he had done for many, many months." It is good to know that the Talbot minister at one time brought some peace and happiness to the great author. It was through Scott's influence that the great Celtic scholar William Ford's scheme was to become the Historia Royal for Scotland, found the Minister of Lagan to be such an able tutor in Highland tradition. Perhaps his friendship with Sir Walter had some influence over George MacDonald, a very dear nephew of Dr. Mackay, his sister's son, who himself became a well-known writer and novelist, and whose photograph always had a place of honor in Dr. Mackay's study. Dr. Mackay expected his nephew to enter the ministry, but no, George MacDonald found his niche in literature. Now, after Dr. Mackay, Roderick Mackenzie came to Talbot. The first minister in Talbot, and probably the most eminent, who did more for the church and for education in Harris than anyone else, was Mackintosh Mackay. Roderick Mackenzie, who succeeded him, came to Talbot as colleague and successor. That is, he came like an assistant minister who was to take full responsibility for the congregation when the senior minister would retire. Now, perhaps there was some bond of kinship or relationship or special friendship between them, for the older minister would probably not have chosen the younger minister as a colleague and successor, unless he knew him very well. But again, Kenneth Campbell, the late missionary from Skagit, said that during all the years they were together, nobody in Harris ever knew if they were related or not. Dr. Mackay never told his elders if there was any relationship between himself and Roderick Mackenzie. And after Dr. Mackay retired, Roderick Mackenzie was the minister here, and he never said anything to anybody about a relationship between Dr. Mackay and himself. So that is a question which will never be answered. Roderick Mackenzie was from Assen, Sutherlandshire, and remember, Dr. Mackay was from Sutherlandshire too. He had an MA degree and he stayed in Talbot for 16 years and then he went to Maryborough, Russia. Now, it is understood that there was some lack of unity in some Russian congregations, especially among the office bearers, shortly after this, because there were moves afoot in the Free Church to unite with the United Presbyterian Church, and some were for this union, and some were against this union. And Roderick Mackenzie had difficulties with his session and with his congregation and with his relations. And he had many, many sadnesses at the end of his ministry in Maryborough. After Mackenzie, Reverend John MacLean came to Talbot. He was an Irish man who ministered in six different congregations, including Carloway and back in Lewis. And he came to Talbot from the Isle of Arran in 1885. He was twice married and he died in 1900. He was an eloquent preacher. And everyone who listened attentively to his discourses in the pulpit wished to listen to him again and again. Perhaps because he hit very hard when he censured the wayward. Dr. Mackay's preaching was logical and reasonable. And John MacLean's preaching was evangelistic and fiery. And he could be very personal when he warned the hearers. It is said that his tongue could be very scathing. And many a young man in Harris felt most uncomfortable in the church pews when he berated them over the dangers of strong drink and their attendance on church worship on the Sabbath and their negligence of church worship on the weekdays. He was very strong on the teetotal lobby and anti-alcoholic. And there were some in Harris who liked to hear him when he was most energetic and fiery in his preaching. And perhaps some still remember the pointed and severe swipes that he gave to careless worshippers. He laid down the law in his preaching, and very few would dare to question his authority, both in the pulpit and out of it. Yet a ready and apt retort to anyone whose opinion differed from his own. He was a good preacher, and he never rushed his church services, and indeed, the people from the Bayes district who walked to church and who walked back after church felt very often that he kept them in too long, especially in autumn, when the milking cows were restless and milking time was spoiled because the women had been in church and the cows were overdue when they reached home with their milking pails. Some said that MacLean's tongue was too sharp. But after MacLean, Reverend Deacon Campbell came to Tyrone. He succeeded John McLean as minister of Tyrone. He belonged to Taylor and he ministered in Ardnamurrough and in Lewis before he came to Tyrone in 1897. An old devout woman from Walter's Wood always spoke of him as being a noble gentleman. The expression she used in Gaelic was sad going to us, a term which was used to mark out someone who was a cut above the usual person who was given the title gentleman. This old lady was a great favourite with little children, and she taught them many Bible stories in a simple way that children could understand. She had no children of her own and she was not married. And sometimes the children were mystified because she said that the minister whom she called the sad universal, Nicol Campbell, the minister had called her a mother in Israel, meaning that she had many spiritual children, even though she had no children of her own. Children who were taught and loved by her and brought to seek gospel blessings through the example and simple faith of the dear old lady who loved children. Now, Nicol Campbell had children of his own, and the man's down there was a happy man with laughter and music and song and games and childish frolics. And the minister helped children to find pleasures in everyday living. Now there are people perhaps still living in Drinishadar who remember that when a swari, that's what they called it anyway, Drinishadar, swari, S-O-I-R-E-E, a kind of party which was held in the school there. And the minister was always the life and light of the party. And perhaps these ideas were especially for children, but we know that there are plenty of music and laughter and song and games and tea and cakes and all the goodies. And it is good to know that in these bygone days, when church people were perhaps sometimes regarded as being grim and solemn because of their religion, yet the children in Harris at a high old time at parties called swarees, happy parties made happier because Nicol Campbell, the minister in Tarbert, was there with them at their games and at their frolics. After him came Reverend Duncan MacLeod, Doctor of Divinity, D.D. When Nicol Campbell left Tarbert in 1917, there was unfortunately a long vacancy. It was wartime. And perhaps that had an unsettling effect on church life. Reverend Duncan MacLeod came to Tarbert in 1919. He was a native of Carvey Lewis, a place called Yeagle. And he came to Tarbert from Linwick, Quebec, Canada. The Presbytery of Lewis honored him and gave him a framed testimonial, which gives an account of his whole ministerial career. And that testimonial can be seen in the vestry of Tarbert Church, a very appropriate setting for someone who served the congregation so faithfully and honorably for 30 years. He was three times in Canada in different congregations. First of all in Saltcote, Saskatchewan in 1894, and from there he came back to Scotland as assistant to the St. Columba's Gaelic Church in Edinburgh. Then he crossed the Atlantic again and he went to Hampden, Quebec, and returned to the congregation of Carlaway. And in 1912 he left Lewis again and went back to Canada, to Linwick, Quebec, from which he came to Tarbert until he retired in 1949. But he lived in the village until his death. He is fondly and lovingly remembered by the older people in Harris, who received so much spiritual edification and teaching from this truly great man. He had a special gift of exposition, and when he preached from the Epistle to the Hebrews, he stressed always the importance of the one word, better. Whatever good teaching the Hebrews had through the ages, they now have a better. They have a better spiritual teaching in the gospel. The key word, better. He was a tall, dark-haired man. He was always as straight as a ramrod. He had his own eccentricities. He was warm-hearted and kind. He was physically very strong. He met many trials and adventures in Canada and hardships, of which people know very little. He was highly respected by all and greatly cherished in Paris.